What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We drink tequila. We talk.
Welcome to Team Tequila Talks.
Okay, great. We're going to get started. Okay. We start off every Team Tequila Talks with a cheers.
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 Oh, you guys look nice and bright orange.
I almost put ours in a wine glass because it's kind of like mimosa morning, but I'm kind of limited with barware because I'm in a hotel. So I just decided to go with the sort of traditional margarita glass, but I did put a little extra in case we need to top off. So we are drinking a morning margarita, which we're going to get into in just one second. But first, your host, Cassandra Jean Bell and Sharon Gonzalez, and our special Vancouver guest, Reminder Hare.
Hello.
And she is known as the RKH, which you can find her on Instagram, of course, because who can't you find on Instagram these days? But we are excited to welcome her. She's going to teach us about all things energy. You've heard about it.
I'm
you
so
might
excited
know about it.
So excited.
She's very excited. She's got her list. She's got her questions.
I love answering questions.
So we are drinking our morning margarita because it is in fact morning time. I mean, almost not. We're rapidly approaching afternoon in the next few minutes as per the timing of this recording. But we decided to do a breakfast margarita because we are in the earlier part of the day. It's a Saturday. We normally are like more in the happy hour time during the week, right? But we just decided to go with this because here I am in Vancouver for the weekend and it seemed appropriate to have a Vancouver guest. So we're doing a morning margarita. What's a morning margarita or a breakfast margarita, if you will? Well, you've heard of a mimosa and you've heard of a Bloody Mary, or given that I'm in Vancouver, I will say a Caesar. Sherry, you know the difference between a Bloody Mary and a Caesar?
I do not, actually, but I love Caesars more than I love Bloody Marys because they're spicier to me.
They're saltier, too.
There's flavor.
It's the Clamato.
Flavor.
Well, so that's the thing is I actually find both Bloody Marys and Caesars to be a little bit like drinking ketchup. Oh. But I don't like raw tomatoes. So it makes sense I am out on a Bloody Mary because I don't even like raw tomatoes in a salad. I can only eat tomatoes if they're cooked. So it's just not for me. So I am always the type of person that is gravitating toward the mimosa. If it's a weekend, we're on vacation, I want a little morning something, something. It's usually mimosa. Unless I go somewhere like to a brunch where there's a full bar, then hit me with the breakfast marg.
Yes.
So what is a breakfast marg? It is, in this instance, there are a few different variations, but I think the bottom line is that it's an orange juice base. And I know we just did an orange mezcalita in our last episode, coincidentally. So we did cover a lot of the orange juice benefits. And we're just going to translate those a bit from immune system and kind of prevention and recovery from being sick to maybe a little bit of recovery from a hard night out the night before, which it doesn't happen to us that often anymore. Because I feel like we're drinking smarter these days.
Yeah, and we hydrate. And, you know, I had a few margaritas last night, a few mezcals on the rocks, but also had lots of water. I ate, like, I'm not trying to wake up with no hangover, but this is excellent if you have to wake up, or you forgot, or you had too much fun and forgot to drink and hydrate in between drinks, this is probably a best option for hair of the dog. This is so, perfect hair of the dog drink.
This has, it is orange juice based. We don't have any sweet and sour. We like to keep it super clean. I, of course, got fresh squeezed orange juice. Again, the benefits of that are that you don't lose the nutrients. And orange juice is chock full of vitamin C, a bunch of B complex vitamins, and potassium, which is an electrolyte. So if you are waking up in the morning, you've heard, oh, you got to drink coconut water to fight that dehydration. Orange juice is actually going to do it too. As long as you are getting whole orange juice, freshly squeezed, keeping it nice and fresh and clean and whole food, then it kind of negates the sugar that's in there. And if you're squeezing it yourself and you even have some of that pulp in there, you're getting a little bit of fiber too, which is going to get your stomach waking up and moving, as opposed to just dousing it with sugar and shooting your blood sugar through the roof when, frankly, depending on what you were drinking the night before, your blood sugar and your glucose might be a little unstable anyway, mm-hmm. because right. you decided to have the cheap Chardonnay at the open bar.
Damn.
So,
guilty.
Damn.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. If you forewent, I think is the past tense. If you forewent my advice on a shitty wedding margarita and you ended up drinking the crap at the open bar, you might be feeling some kind of way the next day.
Damn.
Yeah. So we also added some lemon in there because it never hurts to double up on citrus. There is a hint of cayenne pepper. So why cayenne pepper first in the morning? And you know I don't love super spicy in the morning. I mean, you guys are okay with it with your Caesars, right?
I love super. I even put some cayenne pepper on my orange because I'm going to let that set in and then I'm going to suck it off because I love spice. And you can't see in my drink, but there's a lot of cayenne floating. I almost coughed right now because I was like, oh, shit, I put too much.
So I only put a tiny pinch, but I left some more on the table in case, you know, in case things progress that way. Because I'm not huge into spicy. I would say especially in the morning. If that's the first thing that I'm putting in, I kind of need to ease into a spicy beverage. I don't mind spicy food, but there's something about the liquid form of spice that I'm kind of on unless it's subtle.
And because sometimes people will drink something to ease the spice of the food and then you're like doubling up on the spice, right?
It's a lot.
It's true.
It's a lot for breakfast.
It's true.
But cayenne pepper does have a lot of benefits to it, including digestion. It can bump up your metabolism. So you can really get your metabolism and digestive system going for the day. It's going to reduce inflammation and it can actually help. Back in the day, they used cayenne pepper as a form of painkiller. So if your head's hurting, your stomach's hurting, cayenne pepper can help with that. If you're having any congestion, because alcohol can be very inflammatory, there have been days where if you overdo drinking that, or if I've overdone drinking back in the day, I will wake up and feel kind of stuffy. And it's just because you are inflamed. Maybe you are out in a confined space with a lot of people, depending on the setting that you were in. And so the cayenne pepper is also going to help really clear things up, your eyes, your nose, and really just sort of put some pep into your face for the day so you can bounce back a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And we have one of our all-time favorites, our antioxidant and cancer preventing.
Ginger is like, first of all, the name of ginger, because it reminds me of Ginger from, like, remember that show, on the island? Remember Ginger on
Gilligan's
the island?
Gilligan's Island.
And you think of Ginger, you think of her because she was like all like fabulous and kind of luxurious. And when you think of Ginger, it's like the anti-everything, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, anti-nausea. It really sets you together. It's been shown to improve appetite in chemotherapy patients. I mean, ginger, even for gut health. Now, it's interesting you said they used to do it years, decades ago, 100 years ago for weight management. And I was always like, if you eat too much spice, it also upsets your stomach, which I guess back then in the 1800s, maybe you don't want to eat on an upset stomach because too much of, because it's hot. I don't know if you ever had like just chewed on ginger before or took a ginger shot and your nose, your eyes, and if it sits on an empty stomach, you're not eating anything. So weight management.
It's interesting that you say that, the ginger shot, because I was told in the early days of my nutrition experimentation and philosophy, so I'm talking like my early 20s here, I remember hearing how beneficial ginger is and juicing ginger. And they always said, if you are really feeling a hangover or stomach issue, take a shot of ginger and it's really going to help settle the stomach. except for, you know, I didn't really look at the dosing so much. So I'm sitting here juicing it, taking like 2 ounces of ginger and wondering why my insides are on fire. So moderation, and maybe mix the ginger with like some coconut water or something to dilute it, which I learned the hard way. I remember my brother came to visit me when I was like, you know, 20 or early 20s. I go, yeah, you should just take some ginger because it's good for you. And he had really gone out hard the night before and was so nauseous, and I gave him the ginger and it came right back up.
Oh yeah.
And I said, well, at least it worked one way or another. Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I think he was past the point of no return anyway.
Right.
And so it just helped him at that point.
See, weight management. weight management.
Weight management.
That's what it's known for. I don't know. I feel like ginger for me, if I mix it with like apple cider vinegar and just get it done with like a little coconut water, you can really set yourself up for a pretty good day. I will say ginger and cayenne together probably is going to give you the poops in large amounts.
Ooh,
because
nobody wants
cayenne.
That.
Well, spicy food is a diuretic, like naturally, and cayenne is naturally, and ginger also is like in that diuretic like lane too. So I do think this morning mimosa is probably going to set you up for your poos for the day. And it's also going to give you all the anti
thing.
Yeah. Who doesn't like to be regular? You've never met a person who's, oh God.
Well, enter the fiber in the OJ. See, that's another reason why you want to squeeze it yourself or get it freshly squeezed.
Very true. Very true.
Well, and also, let's not forget about the ginger. We want there to actually be ginger in what you're drinking. So just a ginger flavored syrup or a grocery store brand ginger ale is not going to cut it. I mean, even I think you used real ginger, but there's a bunch of ginger flavored syrups, but they don't actually have ginger in them. And then it's just really sugar.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you're getting a ginger ale or a ginger beer, as we have done here, that has actual real ginger extract in it.
Yeah.
And you use ginger and you made a syrup. So I bet yours
I
is
made a syrup.
Up.
It's actually, I made a big batch of it. For later on today, I'm going to someone's birthday party. I thought, let me.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were saving it for when I got back. No.
Oh, that's what I meant to say. I'll save you a little bit. But it's actually really, really nice. And I use this sweetener that I was in the grocery store and I was like, what the heck is this? And it was like, for your lung health, it was like, it's made with like a little bit of monk fruit in it, but it's actually for like lung health and all types of things. It's called Sweet Fruit Drops from Dragon Hearts. And I thought because we were doing a little bit of this like energy stuff and I was like, ooh, dragon. And the company is
tattoo literally on me.
It's made with Luhan Gua.
What the hell is that?
It helps to moisten the lungs and builds a strong immunity. So I thought, well, I'm down with this.
Lungs, immunity. I think all of these are very important things.
And that's what I use to sweeten the water and the ginger with. It's water, ginger, and instead of agave or honey, I use these drops and I let it come to a boil, simmer down, put it in a jar, chopped up a full root of ginger, put it in a jar, put it in the fridge. It is delicious. You can actually probably put it with tea or put it even, I thought maybe with a champagne, tequila, mimosa, drop that on top, but it's potent. So you don't need a ton of it in your drink.
So we're going to have to experiment with that a little bit more. I wonder how it's going to carry over. I'm a big fan of monk fruit. I know that a lot of people are not huge into stevia, especially plain, because they think it has kind of an earthy taste to it. I don't taste that.
Me neither. Sometimes.
But I also love cilantro and some people think it tastes like dish soap. So yeah, I guess to each their own. But I feel like monk fruit is a bit more mild and is a better sugar substitute for people that might not be into the stevia of it all.
Yeah, it's actually pretty tasty. So I'm excited about this. And the ginger, like I made it, like it's kind of like candied into the mixture. So when you chew on it, it's kind of got a candy flavor to it, which I'm into.
I mean, they make those ginger lozenges that you can chew on. I feel like
the anti-nausea grapples.
Yeah. So anti-nausea and just the cayenne and the ginger together are going to just help with all of the digestion issues. I promise I'm not that far into this margarita.
I was about to say, how many have you had, girl?
We're working on one.
She had the bottle to her mouth when I walked in.
Damn.
Oh, hey, you're here. Reminder, where are you at on your tequila journey? Any answer is acceptable.
Yeah, I love tequila. I'm a big gin drinker, like craft gin, really potent gin on the rocks sort of vibe. Well, usually gin with water, but I love gin. I do also love tequila. So I am more into trying like the higher end tequilas or different tequilas. Haven't totally gone on the mezcal route, though I love it. Like when I went to Mexico, I did a full on tequila tour with different mezcals and they explained everything. And what's funny is they give you like the shittiest version, which there at the tour or the distillery is not bad, right?
Fresh.
Like fresh, it's fresh. Pretty also, fresh. They give you like 1, 2, 3, 4 from like what they think is shitty mezcal to like the top of the line. And so you can really tell in those scenarios, even though by the fourth, you're like, I'm going to die. And then you feel how like smooth it is. And you're like, that was actually really good. So I now enjoy just drinking more premium top of the line tequila, whether it's, you know, what top of the line Don Julio or
that's
whatever.
That's what we're drinking today, actually. Yeah,
I saw that. And actually, fun tip, I don't know if you guys have talked about this on the show, but I was at Honey Salt, which is in Vancouver here, right under the Park Casino. And we were having shots of Don Julio. And the guy brought out orange slices with cinnamon on top, saying you're not allowed to drink it with lime. He's like, don't ever order it with lime.
That's true.
And I was like, oh. And so when you, sure, you had the cayenne on the orange slice, it reminded me of that. And that's how I've been drinking the tequila now. And I really enjoy it. So it's not that I know my different, the different tequilas, like I would know different gins, but I could definitely taste the difference and know what I want to drink. Like I'm not going to be the 19-year-old going and getting the Jose Mickey from the back of the till, right? Like that's just not, I'm not going to be okay with that unless it's like completely mixed with something. But even in that
Then that's Hangover City the next day. Yeah, you can have all the ginger you want in the world. Yeah. It might help, but it's not going to erase what you drank the night before.
Yeah. No. So I enjoy a good tequila. And if I'm going to do a shot of it and at least I'm making that call, it'll be something similar to this.
Well, we welcome everybody anywhere they are on their tequila journey.
Even if you're
drinking
Jose, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. And then we will edumacate you and we will have you take a couple steps in the right direction because there are some good craft tequilas out there that are in a similar price range because they're small businesses.
Yes,
they're
exactly.
new on the market.
Yeah.
And you just got to take the time to go and do a little bit of research and your body will thank you the next day.
Like I like Casadores, for example.
Casadores is good. Yeah, that's a standard like – it's not
like
gonna
well. It's like monster. A well. Is that a, like a well tequila?
Yeah, no? Casadores. Casadores is. It's usually a call.
Okay.
I think and so. It's like a step above. Yeah, but it is like it is. It's pretty versatile. It's pretty approachable, and that is one of the bigger tequila brands. But it is absolutely something that is. I just want a margarita. I'm just gonna have a drink with my friends, and I'm just gonna have a quick one. And that's an excellent choice because you're still getting the nicer batch of tequila. Mm-hmm. You're not going down the mixto route where it's cut with sugar water. But at the same time, you're not breaking the bank. So that's a great happy hour tequila.
I think so too.
So Reminder, in case you guys haven't checked her out, which you should have paused it and gone to her Instagram page when I mentioned it at the top of the episode, but Reminder is an energy worker, an activist. She is a lawyer. She is a just all around dedicated to elevating the Earth's consciousness, I guess, and spirituality, and just kind of helping people step into the light a little bit in terms of awareness. And we're going to go down the rabbit hole with this one, but I feel like the best way to start is there are people out there that have heard of energy and energy work, but they're not entirely sure what it is. Mm-hmm. So give us the log line, give us the pitch.
So as Cassandra said, I'm a lawyer, also an energy healer, and I'm non-practicing at the moment. So I say lawyer turned spiritual healer, but it's not something, let's say I chose, it was something I was chosen for and I've done in many lifetimes. It's something that I came to while I was practicing law I was practicing still this year of 2022, but I started on this awakening and I had no idea what was occurring. And so let's say the catalyst in me really learning about these things for myself was starting to study my intuition, my gut response to things, and really unpacking that. And that ended up opening up my healing and psychic abilities before I had a real catalyst in meeting like my twin flame in this lifetime, which is like your kind of like your soul counterpart and mirror in triggering you in your energetic healing.
And that's not always a romantic, because I feel like the idea of a twin flame, most people see that and they think, oh, soulmate, romantic soulmate.
It's not.
I was just about to ask you, is it a friend? Is it like a sometimes twin flames.
Mentor?
Like some, or even, I forget the fashion designer. He had like a spiritual, and it was like Alexander McQueen said, like he had like a spiritual angel sometimes that he called his twin flame that would sneak into his brain at night and give him like design stuff. Have you ever heard about that? Heard him say that?
No. And I mean, that's just your higher self. And so for twin flames, like true twin flames that know their twin flames and have met their counterpart or know that they're going to counterpart, like I said, doesn't have to be, well, it ends up being a romantic connection, but that 3D manifestation of a relationship is never guaranteed. That's the hard part of the dynamic, is you're meant to detach from that outcome. Whereas in a soulmate relationship or a karmic scenario, which we've all been in those toxic relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Those, we know what the outcome is. You can't control the outcome of a twin flame dynamic. That's why it's so difficult, right? No matter how much work you put in, because if your counterpart is not willing to put in the work to heal themselves, you can't be at the same frequency. And so a lot of Hollywood has glamorized the term, like Megan Fox, Machine Gun Kelly, for example.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
It's not true, right? And so it's like we would know if they were based on where they're at in their healing journey, and you can outwardly see that they're not there. If they're not there, it's not real. Or Paris Hilton, for example, has used that term. And so it's a lot different. Like the amount of pain you go through is literally like worse than me facing my grandfather's death and like things like that. You know, it was a lot, but it ended up teaching me a lot about myself and my healing, and pushed me to my purpose, which is a lot of what I teach my clients about, and what I read on, and understanding the purpose of the world as well as myself, because I needed that, right? I needed that interaction. I needed to shed my ego or feel these certain emotions to find that level of myself. And there's only about like not even 200,000 of us on the planet.
Well, wow.
As a twin flame, just to shed a little bit more light on this terminology, you know, we immediately associate it, if you're not super familiar with a soulmate, as I mentioned before, but you might have hiccups where it's maybe somebody who doesn't have the same gender or sexual identity. It could be somebody that lives in a remote location on the other side of the world.
Yep.
It could be somebody that is already in a family and might love them dearly, but be in a different place in terms 100%. Of awakening and spirituality. Mm-hmm. And there are obstacles in this world that might prevent you from being with that person in a romantic way. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't have a spiritual connection and that you are meant to evolve with them. I mean, I kind of look at it as a spiritual best friend, and whether that manifests in a romantic way, it's sort of like a mission partner. Right. Like you look at people in cop shows and they're detectives, totally. And they've got their partner and they're on this mission and they're trying to solve the murder. They're trying to figure it all out, but they do it together. Mm-hmm. To me, that's more what a twin flame is.
Mm. And my friend had once said to me that she didn't know, like, I don't really watch Star Wars, but she's like, I didn't know that existed in the real world, like that sort of dynamic. And like you said, there could be so many obstacles. And the thing is, it's always possible to have the manifestation of a 3D relationship. But the thing is, we all have ego. We're all 3D people. So your free will comes in the way of the boundaries you're willing to set, the changes you're willing to make, and the happiness that you're willing to really have for yourself, even though the interim may be really painful. And so I was going through, meeting him at that point, and then all these catalysts and changes while I was practicing law. And so eventually my mind was just like, what the am I doing? I was like preparing for a trial with a couple of lawyers at the firm that I was at that point. And naturally, because your frequency is like going like a roller coaster and you're trying to figure things out, your work ends up slipping a little bit, or your priorities are just different because
your mind is elsewhere.
Yeah. I remember
your heart is elsewhere. Yeah, your spirit is elsewhere, but you still have to get a paycheck and pay your rent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it was really that polarity. And that's the thing with the dynamic is, you have an energetic polarity where one carries more of the masculine energy, one carries more of the feminine. And there are gay people that are twin flames. There are lesbians that are twin flames, right? But you're going to naturally see that they carry a specific dominant energy, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what you're meant to heal and bring into balance for yourself. But overall, when it comes to your spiritual growth and understanding, it's important to bring that harmony of understanding your own masculine energy, your own feminine energy, as well as your divine versus distortion. So the distortion is more of like, where are you needy or codependent or negative,
right,
or lacking your value of self and boundary, whereas your divine side is understanding those boundaries, taking authentic action, allowing yourself to put yourself first, being receptive, surrendering, being, you know, in touch with the divine. And so those voices in your head or, you know, your spirit guides or your higher self, it's, you know, at the end of the night, what you're hearing, like you said, the designer thoughts are your higher self giving the inspiration of what right. to do. And it's up to us to actually bring that onto the earthly plane mm-hmm. and make the difficult changes. And so I coach my clients through a lot of making those changes, understanding, like I do human design readings. So understanding your human design, which is like a soul blueprint, essentially.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I can't wait to get into that. I will say really quickly that I love the term higher self, because regardless of what religion you grew up with or that you were maybe conditioned to be a part of, or what church, synagogue, mosque, temple, whatever, we're all really talking about the same thing.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. It's just language, right? We're using man-made words to describe the same thing, but possibly a little bit differently. And we're still talking about how everybody can be as connected as they want to the greater universe and the greater collective. And any religion will teach you that too. Because you look at, I mean, I grew up in a Southern Baptist church. So, I mean, Southern Baptist is pretty intense. Mm-hmm. And what they even tell you then is that everybody's capable of talking to God and God will talk to you. And that's all this is basically saying that you are allowed to ask for help. You can communicate. And if you're willing to listen, you will be communicated with. And so the language is the only thing that really differentiates the fact that there is a higher power, a universe, a collective, a higher self, whatever you want to call it. We're still talking about the same thing.
We are all God in the way that we connect, right? What gets in the way is the indoctrination or harsh ideology that we all know is put on top of this, right? At the end of the day, we see the same thing: sovereignty, freedom, understanding, community. Right. Everybody else's own ego and thoughts gets in the way. And so what we're really in the middle of right now is the unpacking of all of that. That's why we see the world as a 3D shitstorm in terms of people's belief systems.
Right. And I think a lot of times belief systems, higher self. I know I was raised in the Christian church and under that ideology. And, you know, it wasn't until I was older, like out of college, and I realized that, you know, going into a church every day wasn't necessarily like the keys to the kingdom for me. And starting to meditate, take time, prayer, whatever you want to call it. And then you get like doors open kind of mentally where you get a little more freer. You're not so like condemnation, like you can't do this. You know, it's more of a choice. You can do it, but like, it's more of like what choice you feel. I do think that the higher self, a spiritual journey, a twin flame and or a soulmate. I do think, I don't know if you can have good relationships with your friends and family even and your partners if there isn't some sort of spiritual connection. And that's just me. I would not be with my husband if we did not have a spiritual connection. Yeah. I think when I was dating in my 20s, I looked for that. That was like kind of my roommate at the time was like, that's a really crazy thing, like to just have to have a deeper connection. Like, why don't you let it grow? And I was like, because what I'm looking for is more of an instant, like, not like a like, it's more of an instant, like, I feel you, like I can feel you. And I know a lot of times people are like, but feelings lead you astray, which I also think sometimes our feelings, if it's rooted in ego, sometimes can put us down a rabbit hole of just untruth. Like, you don't know, like, I feel this way and I'm going to marry this feeling and now I'm going to think it down to make it real true. Yeah. And so, you know, I know feelings can be betrayal, but I do look for that spiritual connection, even in friendships. I mean, family, you can't, you know, you really can't help who your family is, but.
It's also so interesting too, that when you make new connections as friends, like you start running into people. And so we live in a city in Los Angeles where there's 7 million people. And I remember when Sherry and I were first hanging out, I was at a random restaurant with some of my friends and she's sitting at the restaurant having lunch with her husband. It's like, what are you doing here? Is it the universe just?
Yeah, the universe is like, all right, today is the day that you're going to choose to make a reserve here.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's just one of those things that really shows energy and your frequency impact your reality. We are in Vancouver right now because we had such a strong energy imprint here for almost a decade. We built relationships here. We have nostalgia here and it drew us back to come for a weekend. So whether you believe in energy or frequency or not, it's happening. So you don't have to, you don't have to go in and say, oh, I'm going to create every element because you'll lose your mind doing that.
Yeah.
It can be really, really tough to try to control everything around you. But what you can know is that the more you pay attention to something, the more you invest in something, whether it's positive or negative, it's going to come back around because that's just the laws. It's metaphysical laws. And now the science is really proving that. You have a bunch of metaphysicists that are proving that emotions have different frequency. Hooking people up to machines, showing them a picture of their kids, and then showing them a picture of a murder scene. And their frequency, their brain waves, their heart, your heart's electricity, it all changes. And now we just have the technology to measure it. So if you don't believe it, that's okay. But understand that it's happening anyway.
Yeah.
Ancient Egyptology. I mean, when you watch those documentaries and you look at the pyramids.
There's a word you just made up for the episode, Egyptology.
Egyptology. It's the
that's
real
not a word, girl. No, Sherry always makes up a word. Every episode, it's something. Egyptology.
Egyptology. Cassandra, like the study.
History.
The study of the language, history, and civilization of ancient Egypt. This is the website.
I think you just made that up.
New Oxford. Website. Oh, there's a website.
It's a new Oxford
Are
American
Dictionary. Are you on Urban Dictionary?
Oh, new God, Oxford so American funny. Dictionary. Egyptology is a thing.
I don't know. That might be slang.
That's so funny.
They studied those pyramids that, you know, they just, you know, like what, 10 years ago found out that the ridges on the inside, if you blow like a sound through it, it vibrates and they would sit at the bottom of that and heal from different sicknesses. And it's literally like frequencies, like body frequencies. And, you know, I do think, you know, kinetically, you know, when you like someone, you get like the feels, you know, you get all like butterfly-y. I do think that's a thing. I don't think that's you're just like
you it is.
Making it up and like trying to make a connection. I do think it's a real kinetic force.
It's just there. Yeah. Talk to us about human design because there are different types of, not that you're pre-programmed because you do have free will. But you basically have a soul contract coming into this world and you've seen human design, maybe on the internet, maybe in a magazine, maybe you've heard some celebrities talk about it. Maybe you follow someone on Instagram and it's popped up. Maybe you follow me on Instagram and it's popped up because I post this stuff all the time. But there's basically a blueprint and you're going to explain this better than I am.
Sure. Well, one thing I want to touch on, the soul contract. So the feeling that you were feeling, let's say growing up or finding your husband now, is that soul resonance, right? And so you're in a part of like this, or you are in the sector of individuals on this planet that understand that there is something more, right? You've had incarnations to be at that level in frequency. We carry that energy from our first life and incarnation onwards, where we can feel that. I actually had that feeling as well. I'm divorced and I don't think he'll listen to this and we're friends. But it's like, I always had this feeling of more. And then when I met my twin, I realized what it was, right? And so we have these relationships from past lives that are meant to manifest again. And so you are looking for that feeling of resonance. We're meant to fulfill those specific contracts. People that are really more dominantly based in ego or science versus anything or logic or rationality are kind of in like their first incarnations of life. So it doesn't matter how old they are, it's the knowledge that they're carrying over. And some of them may be in their first life where they or second life, right, where they don't really have much of that energy to understand. And so even though we don't know exactly what it is, that knowledge becomes unlocked and activated. And that actually ties in perfectly to human design. So human design is like our soul blueprint. So I don't know who made or invented this algorithm to give you your human design chart. But I do life purpose readings for clients. Recently, I've done a couple on, you know, one on Trudeau and one on our deputy prime minister so people can understand the ways in which they act. I don't like to do that so much. I know that there are human design readers that will read on like celebrities and things like that. I'm not really a fan of it because I don't feel like that's appropriate. That's just my own my own thing, my own value. But I did it for those specific individuals. So people that think that they are XYZ can understand why they're acting in the way they are. Mm-hmm. And so I do these readings for clients to understand their blueprint. And so that blueprint shows us our definition, our activations, as well as our conditioning. And so things that are not colored in a human design chart. So it looks like body anatomy. It looks like your chakra system plus two more. It does.
And it's got all these lines and these numbers. And it just tells you that you're, you know, this is activated. This is deactivated.
But what's activated? I don't understand. Energy sectors?
I'm going to refill. You explain.
There's a couple of different aspects. So basically, human design looks like a body, okay? If you're familiar with the chakra system, or what people have in their on chakra posters, it's like all the way down the center. But human design shows it on your body, right? So your head, your third eye, your throat. Unique to human design is your G center, which is kind of where your solar plexus is, on a typical chakra system, let's say in the middle of your chest, which is your identity center. You have your ego, which is your heart space. You have your spleen, which is your instinct, your solar plexus, which is your emotion, your sacral, which is like your womb space, your gut, let's say, and then your root. And so human design has those nine centers where chakra system has seven. And so it's cool to explain it with the extra two to understand, okay, am I somebody that really seeks identity or not? Am I really defined in my presence or not, right? Do I have strong instinct or not? And the thing is, we all have, you know, amazing things about our design and the pitfalls in our design. And so the activations can be in those centers. So are they colored in the chart or are they not? How I specifically teach it, and I don't know if other human design readers teach it the exact same way, and especially because, like, I'm an intuitive psychic healer. And so some human design readers are not. And so I intuitively read somebody as I'm reading their chart, right? And so
I see.
I think I process a little bit differently. I mean, that's just natural. And so where it's not colored in, I teach that as our, well, susceptibility as well as our conditioning, right? So where are we more likely to have, let's say, people's thoughts or our ego or the sabotage get in the way that also is in our channels. So your channel can be a defined channel where it connects a couple of different gates because the lines are all connecting, you know, in between these centers. And then that it also breaks down our design versus our personality. Our design is our subconscious.
So I think that's an important distinguishment because basically your design is like your predisposition. Mm-hmm. We've all met people, like, for example, I said, I don't like spicy in my cocktails. That's a predisposition. I'm oversimplifying here. But you've got people that are, you know, maybe don't love getting on roller coasters or are not thrill seekers. You've got people that prefer a bar over a library or vice versa. You've got introverts, you've got extroverts. Now, it doesn't mean that an introvert can't go to a bar and be social. It doesn't mean that an extrovert can't say, you know what, I'm going to pass on the social and go to the library instead. Mm-hmm. The point is that the human design is your predisposition. You still have your free will. If you decide that you want to take a detour or just go splinter off and do your own thing as part of your journey and your self-discovery, by all means, you still have the human free will to do that. It's just telling you what your preference tendencies and kind of the default settings are. Mm-hmm. I guess default settings is kind of a good.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. And like, as we grow older, or let's say not even necessarily older, but usually it works in tandem, right? Because we're born conscious. What ends up happening is people's conditions and our family's preferences and ideologies end up overpowering. So that's why we're seeing a lot of really smart and conscious and awake kids is because as parents, well, your parents, I'm not yet. Yeah. But I mean, I know I'll be the same way. It's like, we're going to be aware of when we're putting conditioning on our children, right?
Absolutely. Well, I have two questions. One statement, which is trauma and what we give our kids is our own trauma is the transference of that is a very real thing. Cause I'm a very scary person. Like, I don't scary like roller coasters. I know. I don't like roller coasters. I'm not a fan of like jumping out of a plane, but my daughter kind of developed a little bit of what I have, like that's scary or that. And I never told her not to. So now I'm very conscious of like, that seems fun. Do you want to do it? And she's like, do you think I can do it? Where it's like, I feel like I would have never done that as a kid at her age. And like some of the stuff she's doing right now, I'm like, and my husband's always like, just let her be. Cause that's a very simple way of how I'm not transferring a lot of my trauma.
But I personally just believe that the veil is thin. early in life, late in life.
Yeah.
It's just that they have memories that they bring over with them. And even with our baby that we have now, sometimes I just see him locked in and smiling and just sort of reading something that looks like a wall. And I'm like, you're talking to someone, aren't you?
Yeah.
You are talking to someone. And I just let him. I don't say like, hey, there's nothing over there to be looking at. I just let him do his thing because I think it's great to continue developing that spiritual connection. And the kids, they come in with the most open minds. They come in and they just have the full ability to be open-minded to anything.
I agree with that. With the, I've seen, unfortunately, I've had the very weird pleasure. I have a very young family. So I've seen a lot, and a lot of people die in our homes, in our family. It's just a thing. No one gets hospice in the hospital. Everyone comes home to someone's house. So I've seen the end of life probably too much, but I will say this, what you're talking about, when my grandmother was dying, my grandmother's mom was dying, when my granny's dad died in our house, I was like, this is before I was like 15. They all get into a state before they stop talking where they look, they call it the death stare. And they, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but they lock onto a ceiling and they would not have been speaking for days. And they talk, they see their brothers, their cousins, their aunts, and they go, wow, good to see you. Is that Timmy? Everyone in my family has done it.
Wow.
Everyone in my family. And I remember we had a nurse. Yeah, we had a nurse with us one time. And me and my sister, we were like 13 and 14. And my granny's mom was dying. And I'm allowed to talk about this because my sister's talked about it in a freaking paper for science before. So, and the lady, the nurse was just very like spiritual. She was very like, you know, your mother's transitioning, da, da, da. And she's like, she's talking to her mother's mother right now, because she was calling a name that I was like, who is she calling? And she's like, that's her mother's mother. And she was like, thank you, that's so nice, thank you. Oh, are we gonna pray now? She hadn't spoken in 3 days, and she started to mumble what was like, I guess, like her Lord's prayer with her great grandmother when she was like six. And the nurse was very like, that usually happens. We don't know, this is the part of science meets spiritualness. Like, we don't know what's happening, but we've seen it multiple times. And so I do think new babies, new spirits that come and old spirits that go, there is this like, I don't know.
Yeah. What was your question? I cut you off because I had to interject.
Where does trauma, and you talked about human design, where does trauma live in the human design?
In our sacral chakra. So our womb space, which is right in our pelvic area. And I actually have this new program, which you may have seen, where I have women that are struggling with infertility that are coming to energetically heal to align with conception, right? So there are many women that have naturally gone through rounds of IVF and IUIs and all these things in order to achieve that goal, which is completely reasonable and understandable because of what we see, but is not happening because of all the harbored trauma in that womb space.
Well, you hear all the time about couples that try and it just doesn't work. Yeah. And they get to the point where they're super distraught and they more or less just give up and resign to the fact that it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And then they go adopt a kid and then they're pregnant 2 months later.
They've released all resistance.
They've released the resistance. Yeah. I have a friend that had really rough IVF and she said, I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. And had twins. And then three months into the twins, she got pregnant.
Oh my God.
So she had three under two. So it was a lot. Wow, she was very grateful, obviously. But it's interesting when you get to a point, no matter what the methodology, where you release that resistance, and sometimes you got to do it the hard way. And I think what you're saying is you're offering a way to release it where it might not be as painful. Like, there's probably still some pain that comes up with the trauma and stuff, but where you might not have to go through this all is lost, I'm never going to have a kid pain, as opposed to I'm just going to work from some prior pain that's already happened to me and help release this so I can just kind of relax and open up to the possibilities.
Yeah.
You said it's in your womb, like your trauma centers, like in your, so like in your lower abdomen, you would say, like,
yeah. So like right up, like in your pelvic area, right above your private.
Cause when I get really
your
mad.
Privates.
Your private.
Yeah,
your private. Yeah, you feel it there. That's your gut, your rage, your emotions are there.
When I get really mad, I get a stomach ache. It's like a pain. And then if I'm really angry, it's the same thing. And my daughter has it when she's like, I'm so mad right now at some friend at school. I could just, I'm like, what? I got to poo.
Yeah. So like your solar plexus are there on your sacral, right? In that area. And so it makes sense because we can release emotions that way. There's a couple of things. There's what you're referring to about the patterns your daughter now carries. There's intergenerational patterns as well as the trauma that we are now in the pivot of healing. So we have the hard job, but also the powerful job of healing that so we don't carry that on to the next gen, right? I see that happen in basically instantly with clients as well as even with myself when I was doing specific healing work, seeing that transference in my own household with my family. And I'm like, oh, that's really like crazy. Like seeing my mom speak differently or sorry, hearing her speak differently about things and doing her own healing work and working through her own traumas. I'm like, shit, I helped that. That's great. All the babies that are coming into 3D right now, like you're saying with your son, he is super conscious, right? My niece and nephew, they just turned one. They're so adorable. I'll get to see them later. Mm-hmm. They are like super conscious being. So sometimes because they're only one, I do my telepathy with them and like get confirmation through their mannerisms. So one, like Venia, the girl, she's like super conscious. She like winked at me and I'm like, oh my God, that's crazy. Like you're hearing what I said, right? And so they're all very conscious. And the thing is that your baby that you've manifested, that you know exists, that you have this connection with, they know who their parents are, right? They have chosen to go through certain things. And so the reason with this program, let's say the reason I did that is because it's like, what lessons do your children or your child want you to learn before they come into this world? What trauma do they want you to clear? What boundaries do you need to create? What environment do you need to change? And so it's all connected with our womb space because of what we actually hold on to from being a child, right? A lot of our trauma, a lot of our actions are because of how we were treated. And so then we perpetuate that. I call it a copy paste of like your like growing up to your romantic relationship. So how did your dad treat you? Copy paste. You're going to accept that in karmic scenarios until you unpack what your value of self is, right? And so we harbor that in that area. And so it's natural, even when we're healing, to feel those stomach pains, to have the diarrhea or even constipation, to go through quite literal growing pains like we did when we were a teenager, because all that old energy is coming out. We just feel it a little bit more there or in our heart chakra. And like, even with what we're drinking, like oranges are great for your solar plexus and great for your sacral because of the color of the chakras. And I know one thing Cass and I talked about, it's like people assume that if you're spiritual, you shouldn't drink, but it's just not the case, right? It's like in limitation, of course, it doesn't make me foggy. Right. I already know my limits in that. And right. If I go above that, then I take a detour.
Do you believe in generational? Because I think what you're talking about, like intergenerational trauma, is more like what in my family we call like generational curses. Like, I don't know if you know mm-hmm. your lineage, but I know mine
like
very.
Akashic records.
Yeah.
Before
yeah.
we get into that, I want to piggyback. Yeah. I wanted to say that there are some people that are very spiritual that say that you cannot drink or have mind altering substances or that you cannot eat animal products. And I have been on my spiritual journey for a while now. And I only disagree with that because I think that we are put in this realm and on this 3D planet to have balance and to be relatable, because how many times have you seen a spiritual guru and you're like, well, I can't relate to that. I think that I've always envisioned where I'm at spiritually is to be like one foot in this realm, one foot in the next, mm-hmm. and to be a bit of a bridge for people in between. Like you can still have happy hour and go on your spiritual journey and want to be connected to your higher self. And I do think that you can eat animal products, but you just need to know that you've got to choose wisely and that you might be taking on that energy briefly of an animal. But if you're eating something that is, you know, raised well and grass fed and organic, which is what, you know, you and I always bring into the kitchen, then it's fine. And it's also, it's like, why are you drinking? Why are you taking mind altering substances? Yeah. Are you doing it because you don't want to deal with your shit? Or are you doing it because you want to have the experience of having a food and bev or being with your friends and just kind of celebrating and having a good time? It's not about what you're doing. It's about the why you're doing it. And exactly. I think that's anything, because you could be sober and be addicted to food or gambling or sex, right? Why are you doing it? It is not what are you doing?
Yeah.
I agree with that. I do think sometimes when people get very holier than thou with, well, I don't eat meat. No one should eat meat. And I was taught as a kid, you talk about like ideology and stuff like that. Anyone who proclaims to be whatever they are being usually is having a hard time sustaining that. So it's like,
exactly.
When you have to announce that, you know, I had an unmedicated birth, or I am vegan, or I don't believe you should drink it. You can't drink and be a good person. It's usually some trauma around that, or some, because most people who exist just be, they don't convince people to be who they are. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I find it weird when people grandstand about, you know, I don't drink. And if you do, you're bad. I'm like, well, then just do your thing. Like,
we don't get into politics here, but there are times with like the abortion debate where I'm like, well, if you don't support abortion, I suggest you don't have one.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
basically. Do it, right? But you don't have to do it, right?
The lack of empathy in the world, no matter what the scenario is, lack of understanding that, unfortunately, a lot of the time, marginalized groups and or women have to brunt the face of, right? Not saying that women aren't marginalized, but you get what I mean. And an example is, when either Native or Indigenous individuals or Black people had these experiments done on them without them knowing, right? Mm-hmm. When it came to syphilis, HIV, et cetera, it's like this was done without them understanding or having knowledge because of how they were treated. That emotion, that feeling, that trauma gets carried through generations. Of course, the government's not going to teach you that. And so then it's the explaining of why people feel unsafe. And right now, the push with the universe is to help others that are maybe unenlightened or have chosen, let's say, before they came here to enlighten themselves or awaken, to become more empathetic to this and to understand that their experience alone is not enough for them to pass judgment or to make a call. And so we are facing kind of this battle between the light and the dark being the government regulation mandates, right. The system. Yeah. Versus individuals that are like, we just want to be free. We want to be sovereign. And when you're talking about metaphysics earlier, it's we all have the ability to heal ourselves through our energy. I've done that for myself. I've helped some clients with that. That is not going to be known because of why the system was created, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, why was Big Pharma created? Why are we reliant, right? Like on an outside level, it's like, last thing they want is for you to know that you can help yourself in that space. Totally. And so it's
drink some ginger, change your
mindset and you'll be healthy, right? Like they're not going to go and like have commercials like that where they're just like, hey,
yeah, because they're selling a product and they want you to buy their product.
Well, and I think to piggyback on what you just said about energy and trauma, and I know, you know, we don't get political here. We don't talk about too deep stuff, but I think it actually makes sense to connect to this is that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, like, you know, anti-abortion and oh, racism doesn't exist. Or, you know, I know in Canada, you guys had a lot of mandates. I mean, like a lot of mandates for COVID and all that stuff and people were getting enraged and you're like, that rage comes from somewhere. People just didn't wake up one day and was like, what the hell? Yeah. The government's in my body. What the fuck? I mean, that rage comes from being free and having so much time to be like, this is who I am. I'm going to eat this in the morning. I'm going to go here, do this. And when it gets limited, I think people get like a little like shook.
Well, that's another conversation for another time. And we have to wrap it up. But I'm going to end this because we did go in quite the deep dive. And there's just, we could talk for hours on this. Hours. But that's not how long our podcast is. So if people want more information, where do they start?
Yeah. So like understanding your design, I have a free human design chart or guide, let's say, so you can get that on my Instagram, the.rkh, and that'll break down, like it'll give you the link to get your free chart. And then it'll break down in my guide how to understand those basic levels. And of course, if you want more, you can get a reading or buy the supplemental guide, etc. There's so many resources online, right? Like with YouTube, even understanding like Abraham Hicks, for example, or Eckhart Tolle and like Joe Dispenza, understanding those individuals through their books or through YouTube and really listening to your responses. I feel like with clients, a lot of the starting point now or people that have been, let's say, getting readings have been like, okay, I'm interested in the design portion, right? I can see it on anatomy. I can see what it is. And so that kind of ends up unlocking and activating the sides of yourself that you want to know, right? It also takes the courage to admit that you want to be on that journey, that you want to unpack those things, and being kind to yourself, because this processing or the changes is generations of stuff, whether that's intergenerational trauma within your family, whether it's energy you've carried from like four lifetimes that you're now here healing. Like for me, on my journey, when I had that catalyst, I was saying I had to meditate on all of my past lives. That was very difficult because I had to clear that karma.
That's a lot.
Between the twin and me, right? Like 9 or 10 lifetimes of like feeling this and going through it and re-experiencing similar scenarios. And that's not going to be the case for a majority of people. It's just why I do the work I do, because this is my last lifetime on earth, because I am fulfilling my purpose to the fullest, that it ends up becoming frequency, right? And people always ask, how do you know? You'll know it's your last lifetime on earth, because you will know. Like you will just know, right? And that shit, we can't control that. But overall, it's just allowing yourself to have compassion for you and compassion for your inner child, which is major. And if you have a hard time discerning what your higher self is versus your 3D self, speak to yourself how you would want to speak to your younger you. Talk to your inner child the way you would talk to 8-year-old you or 12-year-old you, which would be with compassion, understanding, empathy. You're not going to judge them because they were you. And that ends up becoming easier, right? And building that connection with your higher self, because your higher self is not going to talk down to you, is not going to judge you, is not going to call you names. At times, for sure, your guides and your higher self will put you in check. It happens.
A little tough love,
right? Yeah, it happens, right? I've had many times where I know it's not my ego because I'm hearing something I don't want to hear. They're telling me to create a boundary that I'm uncomfortable with. They're telling me to make a decision of quitting law. Then I'm like, oh, my ego's like, no, don't do this, right?
All that's cool.
Yeah. And so it's like, it's building those connections, right? And understanding that your inner child lives within you. A lot of your trauma, a lot of your experiences are based on the healing you've done. And so bringing your inner child along with you on your journey, that is the most important thing you can do, having them included in decisions, because even though we've grown up, the anxiety response is still there. So if they feel like they're put in these unsafe situations or uncertainty, you're going to have that kind of manifest in your experience. And so, you know, starting to build that connection and understanding, I think is a great starting point to making those aligned decisions. It's like, what was I not okay with then? And how am I copying and pasting that in my adult life? And how is making that difficult decision to change that actually going to help the next gen? And so I always say, if you're not going to do it for you, do it for your kids, or do it for your nieces or nephews, do it for your grandkids. Right.
Clear that karma so you're not taking it with you. I remember reading that your eggs were formed when you were 4-month fetus in the womb. Mm-hmm. So that means that you were technically in your grandmother's womb.
It's 7 generations. Eggs,
it's So that's just on the physical front. That's, if you're like skeptical, I don't know about all this energy stuff, you can look up that you were actually, your cells were developed when you were in your grandmother's womb. So some of that DNA, some of that
all spirit, that energy that
is just being
scroll way back on my feed. I'll have a post on that as well as on my podcast, which is under the same handle, the RKH episode 2, how healing yourself heals your family or intergenerational trauma. It'll explain the lengths of like how that womb space works, like you're saying, and how that ends up subsequently healing. So it's like, we can easily externally look at like, how does this help them? Even though we help ourselves, and then we start to see, oh, this feels good.
Yeah.
I feel better. And then we are able to bring that energy.
A little less. A little lighter. Yeah. Exactly. Just like a shot of tequila. Well, cheers. Maybe cheers. Not just like a shot of tequila. Reminder, joining us.
Thank you so much. Tequila
Talks. Follow us, like us. Also check out Reminder's page, the.rkh. And she's got way more. I feel like we only got to the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Her design readings and all the energy, because, you know, we'd like to keep it under an hour. Light, like a lovely skinny margarita. Cassandra Jeanabel, Sherrianne Gonzalez. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.